Hello, everybody, and welcome again to the 86th edition of the Open Paddock Podcast. Sean joining you, as I always do, this fine Tuesday evening, and I have with me Mike.
Osama bin Laden is dead.
And we will get to that. That is actually a topic. No, but happy month of May, Mike. It is now officially the best month of the year, and we're now counting down the days. 27, I believe, was the last count until the 100th anniversary of the Indianapolis 500.
Very nice.
Indeed, it is nice. Was expecting a bit more of a reaction there from you, but you're apparently not in the jumping for joy mood today.
My day was tempered because I watched that IndyCar program on Versus, and it was a good program and everything, but in the background there was action on track and it was NASCAR tire test.
My.
I was like, come on, really? It's May. May equals happiness, and this is the garbage you put out there? Seriously, couldn't you have done it from pub somewhere? I mean,
nice. IMS actually tweeted something about the NASCAR tire test. They're like, it's the month of May, and they're like, do you hear that noise? It's on. There's NASCAR tire testing going on. I was like, guess what? It's May. I want Indy cars.
Exactly, you morons. Seriously,
you can run stock car testing any other day of the year except for the month of May.
Yeah. Well, and my May equals happiness was a bit tempered as well by the owners in said IndyCar series and their ridiculosity, which we will get into later, but we'll just suffice to say they're not very happy about the aero kits, and they've decided they don't like them. So,
well, maybe I'll decide not to watch them next year.
I tell you, I think it's going to take a lot of fan reaction on this one to sway the owners and the series the other direction.
Well, I think Randy, we'll get into that.
Let's get into it later.
But yeah, month of May. Man, did it kick off with a bang, and I mean literally. I mean, how can you start a month of May for the Indianapolis 500 off any better than knowing that that giant piece of garbage sitting his little dirty ass in Pakistan got finally what he deserved? Not only did we not bomb him, we literally flew into Pakistan without telling a soul, we kicked in his front door to his house and shot him in the face. Shot in the face, man. That's like the ultimate, when people are like dissing people and you hear, oh, and they're like, oh man, he just got you. And then that's pretty much what happened. We walked in and dissed you ultimate by popping you right in the face like you deserved, you piece of garbage.
And assassination by SEAL.
Yes. And whatever circle of hell you're sitting in rotting in right now, I will not lose a wink of sleep over it. And you know something? UN, do a human rights case, because you know something? That piece of garbage got what was coming to him. So thank God.
I think that the UN has some interesting motives, and we'll just leave it at that.
Mm-hmm.
But that said, the United States is a very happy place these days because we have one threat to our national security that has been taken care of. It took 10 years, and the guy had to hide in a pile of dirt in the ground for 10 years to keep his said ass alive. But now he's dead, and we can move on with U.S. foreign policy, and the next so-called leader of Al-Qaeda can step up and make his vaunted claims against the United States, and we can send a squad of helicopters after him, too.
And we will. This is a public service announcement to all terrorists. No matter where you are, you can run, and you can even hide for some amount of time, but at the end of the day, we will find you, and we will kill you. And we have a variety of different methods that we can do this with. And we like to exercise all of them, to be honest. So, poke your head up, declare war on the United States. We'll either send a team of psychotic Navy commandos after you who will kill you. They will not capture you. They will kill you. Or we will bomb you and give you about a 5% chance of living.
Nice.
So,
yeah, not to you know, do the whole branch of service thing, but I did see a Marine bumper sticker the other day that just made me laugh. It was said something to the effect of, it's God's job to judge the terrorists. It's our job to arrange the meeting.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
That is very
anyways.
Nice. Well, let's talk. Let's enough of our political diatribe. You guys listened for motorsport, not to hear us talk about the number of ways we wish to see terrorists die. Even though I think you all have good visualizations in your head of terrorists dying, and that's what we like. So, well done. All right, well, let's talk IndyCar. We did have a race this weekend. We went to Sao Paulo, Brazil for the second time. It is the second time in the 2 years, so the second running of the race. And wouldn't you know it, it rained. Does that ever happen in Brazil?
A touch. It just rained a little bit.
Was it a sprinkle? Yeah, was it only sprinkling?
I think it was more like monsooning. it was a rather wet weekend, as you have alluded to. Certainly, it was a good return to Sao Paulo, though, because when they got out there and did practice on the track, did their qualifying on the track, they were like 5 seconds a lap faster than the previous year because they had laid down new tarmac, and it was Will Power basically said it was the smoothest road street course that we run on. I don't think everybody agrees with that because I saw cars just bouncing around on the surface. It was much better than last year, but it wasn't like Interlagos smooth.
Well, there was some real rough transitions I could tell, on those straightaways. I mean, I think it's the coming down. Where is it?
Off of Sambódromo straight, when you go from concrete to asphalt going into turn one was the biggest bump.
Yeah, it was like a drop.
Yeah.
It was like you're dropping in.
Throwing a lot of people off, so pretty crazy.
That it was, but we also had qualifying first.
Yeah. Qualifying kind of went somewhat the way we expected. Will Power ended up on the pole. Notable exceptions in the top six. Well, Graham Rahal ended up fifth. Ryan Hunter-Reay ended up second. So that is a very good result for him. But we know he's quick on the road courses as long as he can keep his nose clean. But the start of said race didn't quite go that way.
Yeah.
He had trouble. But, you know, other notables from qualifying, really not a whole lot. Tony Kanaan, though, didn't have a great day in qualifying. He qualified like something like 16th and then got a sixth-place demotion back to 21st. Did I do my math right?
He was 15th and dropped
21st. And dropped to 21st because they did an illegal nose change during qualifying, which I couldn't even tell you, you know, if that was in the rule book or not, but yeah. Obviously it was. It's other than that, the qualifying seemed to be fairly straightforward. The only other thing to note was EJ Viso straight lined it going into the final hairpin. he had technical failures, something like a brake line ruptured on the car, and he just screamed through there and hit the tire barrier, did major damage to the car, and they were unable to get the car back together and get him out for qualifying. So he ended up having to finish or start from the rear.
Yeah, that was a heavy impact.
Yeah, indeed. Indeed. Now, as far as race day action goes, though, the start of the race, it saw some pretty torrential bad weather. And the very start of the race, the double wide start, they did a good job getting the cars spaced out. And they're coming around the final hairpin 2x2. And that's what you wanted to see. The start of the race, however, Ryan Hunter-Reay had a bit of an issue. that transition that we were talking about from the concrete to the tarmac going into turn one, he straight-lined it, ended up going straight through the nice giant painted section that they have on the inside of the chicane.
Yes.
And once he hit that painted section, the car just went crazy. I mean, there's nothing he could do. He was skidding across low friction paint that was covered in water. It looked more like he was trying to drive on ice, and studded tires may have been a better option.
Yeah, I agree. I think the studded tires would have been a fantastic idea.
Indeed.
Perhaps he could have, maybe Ryan Hunter Ray can Gymkhana.
Well, apparently not.
No, he cannot. He failed.
Well, we'll get more into Ryan Hunter Ray because that was his first run-in with the wall and everything like that. They ended up having to do some repairs on the car and get him back out, and he whiffed it again on, day one of the race because, yes, if you notice, there's a day one and a day two of this race.
It was about the same amount of time as Rally Jordan.
Ooh, yeah, I was going to say, they did stage one, then stage two the next day, and nobody was there.
So maybe studded tires was the best option.
Could have been. But, the other thing that happened in turn one of the event was Dario was on the outside of Elio. And Dario, you can say Elio was being ambitious putting his nose there, but I don't think that's really the case. They're coming around two by two around the chicane. I think it was just that Dario, once he put down the power, his rear end stepped out, slammed into Elio's front side, and pushed him into the wall, busted him up pretty good. And the next thing Danica runs into him, and then Charlie Kimball comes flying across and lands on top of both of them.
Nice. That was
pretty crazy. And then also Tony Kanaan, he ended up hitting Danica's wing in that calamity, and it ended up damaging his wrist pretty good. I haven't heard an injury report or anything on it, so I'm assuming everything is okay. But
she's like, TK hit my wing with his hand. I'm like,
yeah.
Ow.
Yeah, that has to be bad.
That's like sticking your hand out and hitting a mailbox when you're driving down the road.
Yeah. But they ended up being able to run about 14 laps on the first day of the event, along with red flag periods and going out there and trying to run the water off the track with the cars. It just didn't go very well because it was pouring. And while the new pavement looked great, it was very racy. They put up some really impressive lap times compared to last year on dry pavement. It looks like it still needs something in the drainage department.
Yeah.
Because they had a lot of standing water. So hopefully that can be resolved, but it seems that the people in Sao Paulo have no idea how to affect drainage solutions at racetracks.
Looking in your direction, Interlagos.
You. So anyway. So, day one was rained out and rescheduled for the following day. There was kind of a bit of consternation on that one because they announced it on the broadcast at 1 p.m. Eastern time. And then later that got changed. And I think there are a lot of people who don't understand technology who were kind of cut out by that because they didn't, verify.
Well, nobody knew, yeah. And the teams, they were versus TV crew was coming across saying, all right, the race will be on tomorrow at, 10, 9, 8, something. Yeah. And then the teams are like, we still don't know. Nobody's told us anything.
Yeah, they announced it as coming on at 1, or, yeah, I believe 1. And turns out that, that didn't quite happen because the city needed that road back. It's kind of like 465 around Indianapolis. It kind of gets crowded, so they needed that road back, and as soon as they could get them running on it, they wanted them running on it. So they started at 9 local time, which was 8 Eastern, and got it in. Day two was a bit of a change from day one. First of all, they restarted the race the same order that they finished day one in. Certain cars were several laps down, guys like Elio and Ryan Hunter Ray and what have you. But they started on dry tires, but it was raining at the start. So everybody started on dry tires and immediately went into the pit lane. Because this is one of those fairly unique situations where the entrance to pit lane is after the start-finish line, not before. So they took the took the green flag. Everybody gingerly stepped through the chicane and then went straight on the pit lane and put on wet tires. Then through the course of the day, you know, it was kind of intermittently raining, but for the most part, the remainder of the race was on a drying track. Mm-hmm. However, Marco Andretti was the only person who took on slicks, and when he did put on the reds, I was expecting him to end in the wall, but he managed to keep the car from doing that. Beyond that, day two was fairly interesting because they were about six laps shy of being able to make it a one-stop race for everybody. And as long as they had enough cautions, it was just going to be a one-stop race. And some people started to try and gamble on a zero-stop stint. if there were enough yellow, which you could see a possibility based on how day one went, if there were enough yellow, they could finish it under, you know, zero stops, I guess. But the other thing that people were thinking, and this was Michael Andretti's statement for, Jimmy Vassar's statement for his guys, was the thing about trying to make it on zero stops. Well, either we're going to have a lot of yellows, which is one eventuality that gets us to the end of the race, or the other one is the track dries and everybody has to come in, and we would have to come in too.
Mm-hmm.
So that was what they were playing it out. So they didn't stop early on when we had some yellows to try and get on that strategy. So as far as things go, the joy of watching the race was Takuma Sato making a legitimate pass for the lead on Ryan Hunter Ray. Will Power. Ryan Hunter Ray, legitimate pass for the lead. That would have been have to have been Long Beach last year. Takuma Sato had a very good race. Unfortunately, the strategy they worked on towards the end of the race didn't quite work out for them. One thing we did see that was that Ryan Hunter Ray is definitely not the Rainmeister. He had day one a couple of incidents. Day two, he did it again. And by the end of day two, he was running a rear wing that said Conway.
What happened?
Yeah, it was kind of painful. The other thing that's interesting, Franchitti proved that he is not the Rainmeister either. However, he is the Luckmeister.
Nice.
Because he was trailing and trying to take positions there in the front of the pack, and he did a Ryan Hunter Ray-esque turn one. He ended up hitting the tire barrier sideways. He kept fire though, and he was able to get the car moving again without losing too many positions on track. He ended up finishing fourth after beaching into the tires late in the race.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a pretty impressive bit of driving from him. I think that Will Power has to be a little bit concerned about Dario because, he even beached into the tires and he's still there getting points. Dang it.
he's really on it this year. He's had a good year. Where Will Power has had probably just, you know, obviously he's had just a good year and he's in the championship lead after this. Franchitti's been there. I mean, he's just not had any problems. I mean, and even when he finally does sit and have a problem, he finishes fourth place. I mean, who is this guy?
Yeah. Now, the other thing to point out, you know, as far as the final finish race order, Will Power ended up finishing first. Graham Rahal finished a somewhat quiet second, but very good finish for him.
Oh, yeah.
Given the way so far this season has gone. a second place finish is phenomenal for a somewhat new team and everything of that nature. Now, Ryan Briscoe did finish third. Dario finished fourth. Oriel Servia finished fifth. That boy is having a very good season, and pretty soon everybody's going to be singing his praises, not just me.
I liked him enough to pick him for another week of fantasy this week.
Yeah, well, I did very bad in fantasy. I went for the Brazilian vote, and I don't think any of them finished anywhere near the top 80. it was bad. let's see, going on from sixth, Mike Conway, Justin Wilson, Takuma Sano ended up finishing eighth, Hinchcliffe ninth, Hildebrand 10th, and who cares about the rest? For you, Marco finished 14th.
Mm.
Unfortunate. He did have a fairly decent weekend, but not able to put it all together. Other than that, everybody seemed to have varying success on the wet. Sebastian Bourdais had a terrible weekend. He ended up crashing out in day one. Yeah. Let's see. What else to say about the race? Thoughts on the Dallara in the rain?
I think it's awful. mainly because it's hardly a suited road car the way it is. And then put water on the track, and now you've got pretty much 26 drivers strapping into a rocket, which they cannot control on the rain. And, people always say, oh, the rain's such a good thing for racing. It really spices things up. And to a certain extent, that's true. Maybe more along the lines in Formula One. However, IndyCar, those things are like pontoon boats.
Yeah, I would have to say I have the same opinion. It was almost painful to watch these cars in the wet when you compare it to the sheer performance that a Formula One car has in the wet. Even in, heavy downpour rain conditions. Yeah, Formula One, if it rains monsoon, pretty soon they're going to have to stop the race. Usually it's not because the cars are having trouble with the rain. They're having trouble with the standing water that the track drainage can't keep up with.
Yeah.
But it was just hard to watch this. As the track dried in day two, it was much, much better to watch. But day one was just, it was awful.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people, a lot of the people who are how should I put this? The never satisfied fan base of the IndyCar series.
Oh my.
They made a lot of groaning complaints about how they shouldn't have even tried to start the race and the weather conditions that they were given and various things like that. I will say that, yeah, we watched a few laps that we probably shouldn't have. But in the end, if you're one of these drivers, you got to know that the conditions are going to change.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to be racing in this the whole time. So make the best of the situation and keep the nose clean.
Exactly.
So, I don't know. I guess I don't have much else to say about the race. It was an atrocious race. Towards the end of day two, it got better, but it was pretty awful to watch. It was also awful to watch because the Brazilians did the event upright. They got the track in excellent shape for this event. The race day crowd was huge. However, day two crowd was, it was about what we saw at Chicagoland in its closing years. So, it was non-existent. Crickets chirping.
Yep. Well, before we get in, I'm going to kind of swap up here, leading from that Brazilian race to potentially another one. It looks like that we have a letter of intent for 2012, as we will venture back to Brazil in the fall to race in Porto Alegre. In September of 2012. So we knew that this was kind of a realistic thing that could happen, and it looks like now it's official. They're really going to try to make a move to make this happen.
Yeah, I'll tell you, some of the track maps we've seen of this place, it looks to be fairly interesting in that there's a long sweeping stretch of road that is right on the coast. So that should make for a fairly beautiful camera shot. Other than that, not a whole lot to say because we don't know a whole lot of information. Tony Cotman supposedly has worked on the track layout. But beyond that, it is interesting that they're going to go for a September race instead of a, you know, two races together in the spring.
Yeah. You got to try to get out of that rainy season.
Yeah. Well, that's so true.
But I mean, it's not going to be cost effective. I'll agree with you on that. But I think that you need to, I think the fall is the best because of the weather, and I think it would also be better for the maybe the second race to be moved. But you got to be careful because you just don't want to have both races at the beginning of the year because then you're kind of, you don't really have much of an American Championship. And, I mean, here we're, going into the fifth race being the Indy 500. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, if you have the first four races and two of them aren't even in this country, it's going to be hard to build support for the 500.
We're going to have a fun discussion at some point about the 2012 schedule. And I think there's going to be a lot of movement on that schedule before Indy. I think we're going to see Phoenix added in, or at least that's the direction that everybody seems to be leaning, the statements coming out of IndyCar and so on. Some people have even hinted at the possibility that, a Phoenix would be scheduled before the Daytona 500.
Oh, nice.
I like the idea of being scheduled before the Daytona 500, but unless you've got consistent races between the Daytona 500 and the Indy 500, I really don't care. I don't want to see a race and then a month and a half later the next one.
Yeah.
You know,
IRC looking in your direction.
Yeah.
10 years later, round two.
Yeah, so I don't think that would be good for the series. You want to be able to build momentum through the schedule, but they definitely need to get a couple of ovals before Indy. You know, if they're going to add anything before Indy, it needs to be an oval at least.
Yes, I agree. So, and then one other brief topic, Hope and Tongue will drive with a Sam Schmidt Motorsport and Dragon Racing partnership combination. You may remember Ho Pin Tung, one, from his funny name, and two, from the fact that he was originally slated to be the second driver at the Fast team before they were bought out by Sam Schmidt. So it's about time he shows up.
Yeah, Ho Pin Tung actually serves currently as the I guess it's more of a, I don't know, a honorary title, but test reserve driver for Lotus Renault in F1. But, if you can never drive the car, how can you call yourself a test driver? Because F1, you have ridiculous testing regulations. So, anyway, but he certainly got some experience in GP2 and things like that. He doesn't have a vaunted record, though. Mm-hmm. But he does bring, Chinese money, and he brings a Chinese face to the series, and I think it's something the series wants in getting, some more international flair from the China direction. The more Asians they can get, the better they are, because they want to get into that market as well. So yeah. The other thing that's kind of funny to note on that was I was listening to Trackside this morning from, that would be Monday's Trackside. With Kevin and Kevin. And Kevin was not there yet because he was still in Brazil or flying home. And Donald Davidson showed up for the end of it, and he referred to Ho Pin Tung as Ho Chi Minh.
Nice. Well done.
He's a perfect gentleman. He immediately apologized for it.
Oh, my.
But it was rather funny.
A little over the top.
Anyway.
All right. Well, let's go ahead and address the 20,000-pound elephant in the room.
One more thing before we do that. One
Oh.
more thing. I did find it interesting listening to the new program on Versus this evening. One of the things that they briefly mentioned was talk of the IndyCar race at Japan at the end of the season. I guess they're going to make a decision about that. Probably, it sounds like some people from Japan are coming over next week, and they're going to discuss it with the series about possible options. And Randy Bernard said he considers it 75% that we're going to race in Japan this year. However, they did kick around the idea of running the road course at Mobility Land instead of the oval.
Interesting.
That is interesting. It's a very unique oval in that you've got a tunnel that takes you onto the infield of the oval, or excuse me, a very unique road course because you've got a tunnel that takes you onto the infield of the oval, and then the tunnel takes you back out outside of the oval to do parts of the road course. So it'd be kind of interesting to see what arrangement they would use of said road course because I believe what Forza 2 had that, and there were a couple of different arrangements that you could run.
Yeah, Forza 2 had it. That was good fun. I hate that track. It was
Yeah,
terrible.
it was DLC, which I regretted.
Which was really hard. It was just because it was really hard. I was like,
Yeah.
oh, or wait, no, that's not it. That was another track. I'm sorry. I liked Motegi's infield on Forza. That was an easy one. The hard one came from one of the fictional tracks. One of the fictional, like, Southwest Motor Speedway or something. That one was a pain. So,
I found the endless renditions of the Tsukuba circuit in Japan, at on various properties. Whether it was GT2 or GT3 or what. Good grief, it was GT3 and GT4 had it, and then Forza had it, and everything like that. It's like this is just tiresome. I've raced this track too many times, and I never liked it. So why do I have
know.
to race it again?
Oh, I know.
Oh well.
Okay, so I assume that we'll both be in agreement on this next issue.
I
So
believe we will be.
it will lead for some discussion, but not a lot of debate. And I don't think we have to smash the topic too much because I'm pretty sure our listener base has been up to date on Twitter and the interweb on what exactly is happening. But today it was made aware that the team owners for the iZot IndyCar series in 2012 have rejected, yes, that is the word, rejected the aero kits for next year, which would give us three engines, the Lotus, assuming Lotus Cosworth. I haven't heard much anything else about the Cosworth, but I'm sure they're still a part of the deal. The Chevrolet and the Honda engines will be there, and they will all carry a they will all carry Dallara bot or ooh, caught myself. They will all carry Dallara aero kits.
Okay. Really? This is getting old. Okay. The owners have decided that it's going to be too costly to spend $75,000 on an aero kit. According to the league, that's the price cap that they're going to give, $75,000. We talked about this a bit last week because it came up in discussion last week, but it wasn't for certain or anything like this. And it's still not for certain because the league is the one that makes the rules, not the owners. The league can address this any way they choose. They can go ahead and go with the owners and say, okay, Dallara is the only one that we're going to allow, or they could just say, whatever you guys want, but the rules stand as they are, and the manufacturers can do what they want, and you can do what you want. I guess the vote was 15-1.
15-0, AJ abstained.
I think actually, according to 15-0 is what the article said. 15-1 is what Randy Bernard said.
Oh, okay.
He said 15-1 with one abstention.
Okay.
And I believe the one was the Mike Hull.
Yes, my call was very spirited about, very
Yeah.
fired up about this.
I can't remember his exact quote. I have to dig
He
through the
said,
article.
well, one of the things that he said that is cool is he says, this isn't CART. This isn't an owner's organization. We don't make the rules. The sanctioning body makes the rules. And the owners should sit in a room and listen to Randy and Tony and get ready for whatever they decide. And
Nice.
smack. With authority.
Indeed, with authority. I don't know, man. I... Mike Hull said, I told them I think we're making a big mistake. I want bodywork kits. I don't care what it takes because I'm tired of racing spec cars.
Mm-hmm.
If this happens, we're going to have exactly what everybody did not want. The fans made it very clear. We don't want a spec Dallara chassis.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is kind of like, we're already upset because this isn't what we thought it would be.
Mm-hmm.
It's in essence the same thing with people able to manufacture things that make it look different and maybe perform a little different.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of the day, it's not what the fans wanted. We wanted open competition amongst chassis manufacturers and engine suppliers, and we didn't get it. So we settled for this. We settled for this 3D mm-hmm. puzzle, if you will.
Nice.
We were happy with that. And now, all we said was, as long as it's not the same damn Dallara and the same damn Honda engine, all right, we're good. But now, we got three engines, which is cool, but the same Dallara bodywork. I mean, really? I mean, are you really trying to drive your series into non-existence anymore?
Yeah, I think that the thing that has to be said... and we brought it up last week, is it makes no sense that the league and Dallara are forcing every team to buy the Dallara body kit.
Mm-hmm.
The individual teams are going to make deals and contracts with whatever supplier they want to provide whatever aero kit they want. This is a bad move, in my opinion. The league has been making deals behind the owners' backs. You know, they've been trying to woo, you know, they kept bringing up aerospace people like Boeing and Lockheed. Well, behind the scenes, you know what's happening? People from IndyCar are talking to Boeing and Lockheed. They've been trying to get them interested. And maybe if there was interest, it's gone now. Because the owners can come in and say, we don't want to do what the rule book says. We don't want to do what the iconic committee decided was best. Really, you're right, Sean. You said it very well. This is something that we kind of settled on. If we couldn't have different chassis and different engines, then this was the next best option. And one of the reasons we went this way is because the chassis is cheaper. We've got a $300,000, $385,000 chassis compared to a $700,000 chassis.
Mm-hmm.
The aero kits give you the ability to diversify the look of the chassis, but still have the same safety cell and all the safety features of, of a standard chassis. In the end, though, the thing that we were told is it's now a bait and switch. And part of the reason it is a bait and switch is it sounds like Chevy balked.
Oh.
Chevy has decided it sounds too costly. Therefore, Penske has to say whatever Chevy says because he's going to be the Chevy anchor team.
Mm-hmm.
So Penske comes out and starts riling up several of the owners against it. And there's Ganassi, who's probably looking at making other deals than Chevy. And I can't imagine that Ganassi is too happy with the situation as it stands.
Oh no, he can't. He's got to be upset.
Ganassi and Penske are the only teams that we would consider, maybe Andretti as well, are the only teams that we would consider able to afford to really do much investigating on the new aero kits.
Yeah.
And now Penske is not going to do it because Chevy is not going to do it. I would say right now it's questionable whether Chevy ever brings an aero kit. And then I would even go one further. If you delay now, don't tell me it's a delay for 1 year, because next year the owners are going to come up with another reason why they think they need to delay it. So thank you very much, owners. You're acting just like you did in the days of CART, and we appreciate it. And who knows what's going to happen next, because this could get kind of ugly, in my opinion.
Oh, yeah. You know, the first thing I thought of when I heard this, very first thing that came to my mind was FIA and FOTA. I was like, oh my. I was like, this sounds like a FIA FOTA situation in my book.
Yeah, I don't think it's going quite to that drastic extent, but the owners have decided that they don't like it, and you know, even though these plans and these ideas and these aspirations have been on the book since this time, well, since after Indy last year, now they've decided they don't want to do it. Now, when everybody is getting to crunch time, when the regulations are about to go out to the manufacturers, when everything is kind of coming together, we heard them announce on this new IndyCar program on Versus today that next week they will unveil the new car, the 2012 chassis with probably something close to the Dallara Aero kit on it. And if you don't like what you see next week, thank the owners.
Indeed.
Because there won't be any change from it. And most likely there will never be any change from it until we go to a new chassis engine package.
Yeah. They're going to make their bet in it. They're going to lie in it.
I have to say I'm very disappointed in the owners because, as Randy Bernard said, that the IndyCar series has to take a look at this and decide what's in the best interest of not only the owners, but in the best interest of IndyCar in the long run. Because if IndyCar is seen, as we talked about last week, is seen as going back on what they said over and over and over again, I think it's a bad sign. I would further say it's a really bad sign when you're going back on, you know, this new package that you've tried to entice manufacturers and engine builders into your series. You've come up with this great idea. You go out there and you put it out to all these commercial firms. You try and start building sponsorship around these ideas. And the next thing you know, the owners have voted it away. And all of this sponsorship interest and all this manufacturer interest and all these things that are coming into line because of the decisions you made last summer, that's all undone. Not happy.
I agree. I think everybody is pretty pissed about the whole thing. So it's just something we're going to have to, I guess, you know, just something we're going to have to keep checking and monitoring and hoping that the fan vote or whatever it is that they're trying to do up there, eventually, you know, because again, at the end of the day, Randy Bernard and the boys are the sanctioning body, and who cares if the owners rejected it or not? If you're the boss of the sanctioning body, you tell them that they either take them or you get the hell off our racetrack. And, you know, some of these teams, that's all they've got. So, yeah. You know,
my opinion, this is how you address it. We respect the rights of the owners to make whatever decisions they deem necessary. However, the rules are as we have written them, and you will be it will be available to you to purchase any aero kit that you prefer.
Yeah, I like that.
I would even go one further and just yank out this whole Dallara thing, but unfortunately, that's basically what Dallara has built their business plan around, about selling extra carbon fiber bits.
Yeah.
So it's probably way too late for that one.
Yeah. Terrible, I know. Anyways, is that it for IndyCar?
That's it for IndyCar.
All right, well, it's not really going to get much easier for us tonight because our show of happiness is not overly happy. We actually did have a rally this weekend for the Rally America Championship. It was the Olympus Rally, as you may remember, formerly a round of the WRC. And, yeah, we did not get very far whatsoever in the rally. So, yeah, I mean, during the second, or not the second, during the sixth stage, there was an accident. There was a, it was a Subaru STI, piloted by one Mr. Matthew Marker, driver from Michigan. He's been in the series for some time and competed at the national championship level. And unfortunately, Mr. Marker had a serious incident where he went off in a very high speed section and was, you know, he did hit a tree with his car. And unfortunately, he was killed as a result of the accident. So, yeah, not a shining weekend for the rally car, Rally America Championship. We here at the site, I never knew him very well compared to the other drivers, obviously. But I do know from what I've been reading and from what I've, you know, and just from the general knowledge that I had, that, you know, this guy, you know, he competed in the national championship and he, you know, wasn't one of those guys out there, you know, winning all the time. He was doing it because he loved it. He was rallying because it was what he loved to do. And, you know, and for that, I think that the rally community especially has lost, you know, is just got a gaping hole right now. Because, you know, it is those people who just do it for the passion, especially in Rally America. Rally America is not the WRC. Most of the drivers in the championship know they will never see the WRC. But it's their passion for the sport that keeps it alive and lets us have a premier rally championship at the end of the day. And losing a person like Matt is absolutely just, is just massive. So that being as it is, the results would be that David Higgins would in fact win overall. Yeah, he would win overall, followed by Antoine Lestage. After Antoine Lestage, it was Dave Mira, and then one Travis Hansen. So. Yeah, not a spectacular weekend for us in the rally there, Mike.
Yeah, indeed.
So, yeah, it's terrible.
Certainly, our thoughts and prayers go out to his family and the Rally America community, because this is a staggering loss to lose a competitor in all these events, and not just a competitor. Obviously, we can put it in those terms because, you know, that's what we follow. We follow the motorsport, but obviously this guy's is a life and has, you know, he has his family ties and his friends and everything like that around him, that even outside the rally community. So
yeah,
thoughts and prayers are with him.
Yeah, it was, I mean, it was just, I was actually at a movie. I was watching Fast Five. And I came out, and people were talking about Olympus, who were IndyCar fans that I didn't think were, you know, rally fans, obviously. And then I went to the website's Twitter on the old mobile and seen that there had been an incident and that Rally America was going to be making a statement once more facts were gathered. And at that point, I kind of knew, you know, that we had a real serious situation on our hands because, you know, they don't do that very often. So... you know, anytime that happens, you can pretty much rest assured, unfortunately, that, you know, that's what's going to happen, I guess. So, anyways. All right, well, moving on, we do have a couple things at the national, or I'm sorry, at the World Championship stage. The IRC is going to see a emergence from Subaru again. As the Subaru is bringing in the R4 Imprezas, the R4 Impreza STIs, and they're bringing quite a few of them. They basically, what they've done is they've made it to where Group N cars can now compete somewhat against the S2000 cars, because before, the S2000 cars would just massacre the Group N cars. Mm-hmm. and they were just nimble and handled much better. The Group N cars were much too heavy to compete, and now the Subaru and Mitsubishi both have been working on R4 development, which bends the rules for the Group N cars so that they have a better suspension, are a little bit lighter weight, and can actually compete with those S2000 machines. So they will be in the field, and I think there's one starting as soon as the next round of the IRC in France. So we'll have a Subaru entry with Yokohama tires. So we'll get to see the R4 in action, and hopefully Subaru winning stages and rallies yet again.
Yeah.
That may be a bit optimistic, but it would be nice to see that name back in victory lane. Especially, I know you'd like to see that.
Indeed. Now the Subaru teams are going to come in, two factory backed Subaru drivers, Toshi Arai and Fumio Nutahara. Sorry. We need Mr. Rogan to pronounce
Yes,
those
yes.
for us. I think he has a better handle of the Japanese language than me. But that said, boy, I'm just happy to see that, and just hope it continues to grow and build. It would be nice to see Subaru making some sort of effort on the national stage again.
Yes, or the world stage.
World stage. Yeah, indeed. They're on the national stage, the Subaru Rally Team USA that nobody hears of anymore because, well, yeah, they don't have any star drivers. Except
Yes.
Dave Mirra, I guess people know him.
David Higgins is a rally driver.
David Higgins is a rally driver, but he's not like on Nitro Circus.
Yeah.
So,
Nobody nobody cares if you're not on that show, right?
exactly, I will say this. Yeah, all you motorsports nuts in across the United States, and obviously in England, who are fans of the Top Gear show. I'm sorry, I've watched a couple, and I'm not terribly enthralled with it. However, Nitro Circus, that's a show I can get behind. That is nonstop fun.
Nice, you're a fool. And your sarcasm sucks. Yeah, I'm just kidding. We do have the WRC this weekend in Italy, and it looks as though Mini will find we're finally going to see the factory Mini boys, Chris Meek and Danny Sordo, both will be at the helm of the John Cooper. Mini Cooper, or no, the John Cooper Works WRC, brought to you by ProDrive and Mr. Richards. So now we will finally see Danny Sordo back on the calendar.
Who?
Yay! Yeah, I know, right? What just happened there? No, I'm just kidding. He's if this car performs anything like the S2000 model did when Armando Arroyo was behind the wheel, we may be in for a shock this weekend.
That would be
So,
fun to see Mini come out of the gate, and
guns
that
blazing.
would be very cool. I see it as very, well, I'd say highly unlikely, but it would be cool.
So, the rally will be a bit different this year, as we have a slightly different route in Sardinia as we usually do. Some changes were made to the stages. But it's going to be a good rally. So we've got, obviously a very tight points battle between the top four. Both Citroen and Ford drivers really going at each other. Both Sebastian Loeb and Mikko Hirvonen at it with young Ogier and Mr. Latvala also battling it out between each other. And any one of those drivers at any chance can take the championship lead. So they are separated within one rally. They are within striking distance of each other on one rally. So it's going to be awesome to see the high speed gravel air and dirt that is Italy. So it'll be interesting to see. So it's going to be fun. I really like this rally. It was off the schedule last year. But it's back on this year, and I think it's going to put on a hell of a show, especially with Mini in the mix. We may even see some results in the top five you know, change a little bit. So having Mini in the championship now will be certainly a wild card, I'd say, to those championship runners. So, well, do you have any picks?
OJ.
You are a fool.
I'm riding that pick.
I know. I will go with Mr. Latvala. I think that much like in Jordan, it'll be tough for Miko and Sebastian, given their position on the road. I think the road will suit Ogier and Latvala much better. And then I think, you know, again, I think that just the raw speed that both Ogier and Latvala show will also separate them. I mean, watching those two, we're really seeing a change in the generation, if you will, the changing of the guard. So, as Loeb and Hirvonen continue to grow older, more seasoned, I guess is a better way of putting it. But yeah, it'll be interesting. So you've got Ogier, and I'll take Latvala.
So how did your pick in that IndyCar race work out last week?
Shut your mouth. How's that? Didn't work out well, Mike. Didn't work out well at all. Is that what you wanted to hear?
It is. I feel better now.
I hate you.
Yeah, well, I will. You hate me and Doug because we had the same opinion on that race. And
yes, but he's not here. He's officially
fired. Quite right.
He's fired.
Now that said, on my, you know, I hate to drag the WRC section back into IndyCar, but I would say the only thing I scored on in my IndyCar fantasy picks was willpower.
Oh, nice. You
it
suck.
Was very, very bad. Anyway, going on with WRC.
Well, yeah. Going on with the WRC.
That is right. That's the end of it.
That is the end of it for the most part. We'll have the rally. I'll do my best. I'm not going to promise it for day-by-day coverage because I said that the last rally and I wasn't able to fulfill due to work. But I will do my best to get a day-by-day recap up there for the WRC fans because I've been letting them down lately. I have not been covering my sport like I wanted to, given all that's been happening with IndyCar. And, you know, trying to, you know, cover both things at the same time is a little difficult sometimes. And I've unfortunately put my true love on the back burner. So I ask and beg and pray that the rally fans will seek pity on my soul and not kill me. Osama style. Show up in Open Paddock headquarters, helicopters landing next to Open Paddock headquarters, and people brandishing Ford and Citroen gear get out and shoot me.
Ask your dog. Your dog identifies you.
Yeah, exactly.
Right there.
Is that him?
Point.
Yeah, right.
I didn't know you were a hunting dog. Blam!
Yeah, right. I think we could take this one section and mention that the Open Paddock headquarters is moving.
Ooh, yeah. It's too soon.
Too soon. The Open Paddock headquarters has been put on full alert that it will be moving to Doug's neck of the woods.
You gonna be taking up residence in Higginsville?
You know what? If they've got a nice place to stay for the right price, you're damn right. So,
and I can hear Doug right now going, no!
Yeah, right? I already said, I was like, yeah, I can't wait. I'll be hanging out with you every day. And he's like, brr. What? I'm like, hell yeah, son.
Well, the satellite office in Columbus, Ohio will be staying firmly in place.
Yeah, continue to hold ground.
Despite my best efforts.
However, rumor had it earlier before the show that you were looking at property in Pakistan.
Too soon.
It's not too soon. It's too soon if the public actually likes the person. If he's a genuine crap bag, then it's never too soon. Pile it on. Pile it on, boys. Pile it on.
There's one acre of land in the outskirts of Pakistan's capital city that's for sale that I would like to purchase and fill with 14 tons of manure.
Nice.
And a little diesel fuel.
Nice. Well, rumor had it you wanted to go there because it was a posh lifestyle and people were able to, you know, were interested in finding you.
Yeah, well, you know, people would be stopping in all hours of the night, you know, just dropping in.
Look at this $1 million flat. It has every amenity any businessman or CEO could ever want, including 2 helicopter pads.
Are those bullet holes in the wall? Yes, it is.
Needless to say, the last resident had some disgruntled fans.
This property comes with genuine Osama bin Laden brain matter. Okay,
beer, man. Not while I'm drinking the beer.
Not cool. Oh, come on, Sean. It's not like it's a big investment. It's just PBR.
Oh, come on. It's PBR. Wow. It's beautiful and it tastes good.
Oh, dude. Okay, let's jump into the fantastic world of Formula One and just discuss a few things that are going on. Number one, the FIA was told by Bernie Ecclestone. Bernie came out last week and made the comment that he thinks that they should let Bahrain, you know, give them a little more time, you know, a couple more months or whatever. To which Jean Todt said, no, we'll stick with May 1st as a deadline. And then it came out today that they're going to allow for an extension until June to make the decision whether Bahrain should be back on the schedule. And I'm sure it won't be, because the next thing that's going to happen is between now and June, the entire country of Bahrain will erupt in more political strife.
Yeah.
And you know, some more Saudis will blow up a few more mosques. Saying, no, it's going to be back as, you know, status quo. Everything's back to normal. I'm sure the death of Osama bin Laden will not create any additional stress.
No.
Region, right? Nothing's going to change, right? It's just going to be business as usual.
Yeah, business as usual there. So no impact on that, on those problems.
Here's the thing that makes Bahrain an awful proposition. If you had to wait till May to decide whether or not Bahrain should get a race back, and then you're not sure, so maybe we should wait till June. And let's say at the end of June, you go ahead and decide, well, Bahrain looks good. So you reschedule the race, and nobody's going to show up.
Yeah, right.
I think we can guarantee that. Who in their right mind would go there for this race? I think pretty much every country on the planet that's somewhat civilized has something like a travel advisory against Bahrain, or a do not travel to Bahrain order. I just can't see this being a viable option. And I wonder how many of the teams are going to get involved behind the scenes and say, you know, you can say what you want about this, but we're not going to show up.
Yeah, right. We're not going. What? We're not going.
I don't even know why they're entertaining it at this point. The race should be off the schedule. They should not entertain rescheduling it. Let's get back to the iron hand of the FIA of the past and just put the ban hammer on the event and then sit there and laugh at the at FOM and say, I don't really care. It's your problem. You scheduled a race and it didn't go off very well, did it?
Yeah,
maybe
right.
You should do a little better job scheduling your races and not put 3 of them in the Mideast.
Yeah. Because that place never has turmoil.
Yeah, I mean, it's such a, you know, model of stability.
Oh, it is, yeah. It is.
Oh, well.
I agree. Banhammer.
Banhammer. Jean Todt, get out the banhammer.
Yep. Do your civic duty, sir.
Dole out the punishment.
With the monster girls.
Oh, no. Didn't he must have just found that switch in his office. He flipped the switch and he's like, where, what the bookcase opens up? Where does this go?
And it's like a torture chamber down there. He's just like, oh my God.
Anyway. Okay. Still not sure if there's anything to see here yet, but News Corp. You know, we've been hearing rumblings about this for probably the last 2 weeks, and now it's come out. News Corp and a company called Exor, which kind of pretty much owns a big chunk of Fiat, Therefore, Ferrari. they're putting together an exploratory committee to investigate whether a committee should be formed to look into the possibility of possibly,
starting a committee to maybe talk about buying.
Anyway, they're in the very preliminary stages of putting together, you know, investors and various things like that to come up with, they haven't made an offer to CVC. They haven't talked with Bernie. They're just basically saying, we're kind of looking into it right now. So don't let the furor coming from the European newspapers blow up too much, because this is extremely preliminary stuff. And tomorrow it could change. They could decide they want to buy Facebook instead. So I wouldn't put too much into this. It's one of the things that's made a bit of a stink about it, though, is that one of News Corp's properties is Sky Media, and Sky would be somebody who would like to take F1 and make it pay-per-view.
Oh my, and that would piss the Brits off.
It'd just tick everybody off. I think that us in the States would be pretty upset as well, since we already pay a buttload for our Formula One, and then we would have to do something different to get Formula One, in addition to the IndyCar that we have to pay buttloads to watch. And, if you're into the MotoGP, well, you'd have to continue to pay buttloads to watch it and all that kind of stuff.
You're fired.
Yeah. Anyway, so nothing to see here yet. We'll keep an eye on that. And hopefully something, yeah, never mind. I could care less what happens. Hopefully they buy it out and can Bernie.
Nice.
Zitrol. Yeah, Zitrol. Another thing that's kind of somewhat interesting is a car company that I'd never heard of has been purchased by the Team Lotus group, Tony Fernandez's group.
You've never heard of Caterham?
No, not until this came out.
Oh, wow.
So, anyway, I'm sure I've raced one of them in one of the renditions of Gran Turismo that, you know, you get this garage full of cars and somewhat care less about them. But anyway.
Caterhams are cool cars.
It's interesting. The 7 is, it looks like it's really old.
It's supposed to be that way.
Yeah, well, anyway. So, yeah, Team Lotus has purchased said Caterham car company, and we have no idea what their intent is. Some are theorizing that they will rename their team to Team Caterham and start merchandising and branding around that name instead of the Lotus name, but nothing is currently on the books.
And Tony Fernandez refuses to stipulate that he is losing his court case against said Lotus group.
Yeah, if you were confident of the result of the court case, why would you purchase this car company? If you wanted to continue to call yourself Team Lotus, why would you purchase this car company? I think really what has been said many times and probably is going to continue to be said is that Tony went out and bought the Team Lotus name to sit on it, kind of like a patent troll.
You know,
goes out and buys a patent and just sits there and waits for somebody who wants it. Well, he knew that Lotus Renault was very much interested in using the Lotus name, and they were not interested in having his defunct little operation continue to call themselves Lotus. So yes, he sits on the name, and we've heard as much from at least the some of the people in the Lotus group. Lotus side have basically said that Tony offered up the Lotus name, the Team Lotus name, back to them after he got the rights from the Chapman estate, and he had such a ludicrous price tag attached to it that it wasn't even worth talking about. And really, that's basically what happened. He just wanted to make money off of it, and part of that reason was because he invested in a Formula One team and then realized, oh crap, this is expensive.
Yeah, right. Oh, you actually have to pay for these things?
Yeah, indeed. And he's even taking it one step further. He's bought a car company.
Nice.
That can only end well.
Yes.
Just ask Spiker.
Yeah, right. That worked.
So yeah, I think you're right. The court case probably is not going to his desire. Any day now, we'll hear about that court case. Any day now.
Any day.
Any
12 day. 12 years from now.
Any day, Ferrari's going to come up with an upgrade to a car that actually boosts its performance.
Nice. So they say.
And so they say we'll be at Turkey. Ferrari is going to introduce a new front and rear wing and some modified brake ducts going into this round. But what's funny is the discussion about why they're off this year. Ferrari's chief designer, Nicholas Tombazzi, has started talking about it and basically saying, yeah, we were way too conservative with our design approach, and we're having trouble with our wind tunnel. We think our calibration was wrong in our wind tunnel. The question was brought up in the article that they had moved from a 50% sized wind tunnel model to a 60% sized wind tunnel model, but they were using the same wind tunnel. So therefore they had to recalibrate, you know, their readings and everything like that, because you had a larger body in the same size tunnel. So the walls were creating some additional, issues. So they're saying that they may have got that wrong. So that might have been part of why they were not seeing the downforce they expected from the wind tunnel models. And then he goes into talking about how, you know, some teams have a really loose way of going about interpreting the rule book and da-da-da-da-da.
Oh, Lord.
Exactly. And then he starts talking about the flexi wings. And then he jumps into the thought of, but, you know, since the FIA has said it's okay, then we're going to go and exploit the rule book. No, you're not exploiting the rule book. Continuing to harp on the idea that Red Bull should have done things the way you thought the FIA rule book said, but unfortunately, Red Bull read it with a fine-tooth comb, and you didn't. You should have learned from Ross Braun.
Yes. Double-decker diffuser, anybody?
Yeah, exactly. Double-decker diffuser, you should have learned from from Red Bull Renault last year when they came out with their unique implementation of the exhaust gases.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that wasn't perfectly in the FIA rulebook, but you know what? It did a really good job. And they're sitting here saying, well, we were too conservative on the design. You know what? If you were too conservative on the design, that's your fault.
You weren't trying hard enough.
Yeah. We'll see you this weekend with your new flexi wings.
Wow!
I was waiting for it. Oh, dude. So, yeah, Ferrari, we'll see you this weekend, and maybe you'll have something to show for your complaints. We were talking about Williams, how they've lost a third of their value because they floated themselves on the market, and well, they haven't raced well, so yeah, they've tied their value to their performance in a new way, not just on their returns from the FIA purse, but also in their stock market dividend reports and things of that nature. But they've had a bit of turnover. Sam Michael has resigned as chief aerodynamicist. Technical Director Sam Michael and Chief Aerodynamicist John Tomlinson have resigned from the team. And the team has announced Mike Coughlin as their Chief Engineer. Mike Coughlin, do you recognize that name?
It does strike a chord.
I think he's in NASCAR. Wait. He was in NASCAR. He just signed on with a NASCAR team this year, and he just quit so he could go work for Williams.
Wow.
Oh, yeah, that Mike Coughlin, the guy who was involved in, you know, Spygate.
Ooh.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
Hey,
This
Mike,
is going to be interesting.
Did you run over to Kinko's and
I have the Ferrari plans right here.
Yeah, indeed.
We'll
So
win again, I promise.
Yeah. What an interesting arrangement that Williams is jumping in with Mike Coughlin. But, you know, some people have already said, well, why would you go with Mike Coughlin? Well, at this point in the year, who's available?
Yeah, nobody.
Yeah. So Mike Coughlin may have been the best person that they could come up with. And though he may have fallen into disfavor with the FIA somewhat, he was available. And there's no denying the guy's talented at what he does, just not talented enough that he wouldn't need, you know, the reams of Ferrari technical data.
How about you just be a race car engineer because you don't make a good spy?
Let's
just gonna come
let's
out
get
on
straight.
A limb.
First, we're gonna set you down with our corporate assets division. You know, his name is John, and he worked for Black Snake for a few years. And
nice.
Our corporate asset recovery division. And he's going to tell you point blank, you will not ever even talk with anybody from another team.
Exactly.
You will leave that to me. Oh, geez. So also in this whole ordeal, it was revealed that Patrick Head would be retiring.
Oh, nice.
I guess Adam Parr, the team chairman, announced that Patrick Head would be retiring. To which Patrick Head said, yeah, I haven't said that.
Oh, my.
There are a few things, quoting him, there are a few things wrong at Williams at the moment, and Sam and John are little more than scapegoats. Sam is a good man who was overworked and probably should have been appointed better people around him. Oh, jeez, what a mess. So
yeah.
Patrick Head is not very happy, and he's made it very clear that he was spoken for and not necessarily speaking.
Nice. I like Patrick Head. I'd be mad if he wasn't there anymore. Granted, I know he's getting a bit older, but he's been there for so long. I mean, he's a stalwart of the old Williams team, one of the founding fathers, if you will.
Well, now that Williams is a traded asset on the market, you know, Patrick Head may not have his place there anymore. Capitalism shall reign.
Nice. Get out!
Capitalism shall reign also in Turkey.
Yeah,
as we talked about last week, Turkey has been, you know, their sanctioning fee has been raised to $26 million is what Bernie is asking for. That's an increase of $13 million over the previous season. So Turkey has basically said not interested at that price, but they are willing to negotiate. And this is basically what we said. This is just the opening salvo in the contract discussions as to whether Turkey will return or not.
Yep.
I would say their starting positions are fairly far apart. And for a track that, you know, last year put 35,000 butts in the seat, I can't imagine them being too interested to raise it too much from the 13 million mark, because they're not going to make anything off of that race.
Yeah.
And then beyond that, you know, when the race first ran there, they had some 200,000 people show up. So it really hasn't developed well over the years.
No.
Shall we say. But that seems to be F1 in any market.
Yeah. Any of the new markets.
But Turkey is on the tip of our tongue, so let's talk about the race this coming weekend in Turkey.
Red Bull.
It's hard to say no to that one. Let's see. Do we want to say there's any chance for anybody else on this one? I think there is, only because of one reason. The tire wear is going to be fun to watch.
Yeah, tire wear will be intense, especially with turn 8.
Yeah, exactly, with the whole, you know, multi-apex turn 8 thingy. This could get pretty wacky, because Pirelli has already warned the teams that turn 8 will be highly degrading on the tires.
I can imagine. We can only go one lap.
Bird shooting rooster tailing up in the air behind the car as it goes around the corner.
Nice. That's disgusting.
Oh, dude.
Well, that'd be a good race. Let's see if the DRS will have any kind of an impact.
Yeah, they announced the DRS zones earlier today, but I didn't really want to look too closely at it because I figured I could watch it in practice and figure it out a whole lot easier than I could for ambiguous descriptions of it in a news article. But, yeah, I hope to see another good race at Turkey. Just keep in mind this possibly is the last race at Turkey.
Yes. So. All right. Well, that looks like it does it for the show, does it not?
Yeah, I guess I still have to say who I think is going to win the race this weekend. Oh. And I guess I'm just going to have to agree with you on the Red Bulls. I can't with confidence say it's time for me to switch to McLaren.
Yeah.
So we'll go with young Vettel in his Riscali named car.
I agree. Yeah, Vettel it is.
And we'll watch the Mercedes pit with great interest to see if the Monster Girls show up.
Nice. They will not. They're hanging out with me.
Nice.
I have a lease on them.
There was a sighting this week. I figured out where the county beauty queen. They're on said versus program for the IndyCar series. They had Brian Clausen on.
Oh, nice. Okay.
Talked with him a bit, and they were showing highlights from Topeka.
Nice.
What am I thinking? The Dodge City.
Yeah.
Round of the USAC Championship, the midget race, where Clausen won both nights, and he was sandwiched between two of those county dirt track queens.
Nice.
Holding up a trophy.
Nice. So,
did have a sighting, and it was on national TV. It's very exciting.
Stay classy, girls.
Yeah, indeed.
All right. National
TV at 4 p.m. in the afternoon. competing with, you know, Oprah and all the other.
Hey.
It's time for The View.
Nice. All right. Well, that's going to do it for the show this week. Thanks, everybody, for the download and the listen. Remember, you can like us on Facebook. You can also follow us on Twitter. Big thank you to all of our new Facebook fans and all of our new Twitter followers. I hope you don't let you down. Do appreciate the add-on. That's all we have for this week. So it looks like we'll be back next week. Same time, same channel. Say goodbye, Mike.
Good night.